Masons, which are in the other parts of the book.
Anyway, Jerry, thanks ever so much for coming in and talking about all this stuff today and helping us review the news earlier on. And I'm sure we'll be speaking to you again sometime in the future. Now, we go back to the 1982 Falklands War and a Bristol soldier who fought there as a private in the parachute regiment. He approached this programme to confess to having been contravened the Geneva Conventions. One event in the heat of battle for Mount Longdon has been a burden on his mind down the years.
My name is Bryn Richard Cowley, and during the Falklands conflict, I was a private soldier with 6 platoon, 1 section, B company, 3 para. I first heard of the police investigating rumours of POW murders in around about 1993. Various other books that were out, including Excursions to Hell, for example, and other such books, it introduced me to the idea that there'd been some unorthodox treatment of prisoners, and that began me thinking about the entire question.
So, but you had some similar experiences yourself, didn't you? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it took me a while to actually realise, because of the mindset and the control of training that the paras tend to instil in people. But by 2001, I'd begun to record this on paper, and I essentially wrote to the Argentine embassy directly, giving them full information as possible.
Take us back to 1982 and the heat of the Falklands conflict. What happened there? What did you witness that disturbed you?
Well, in particular, an incident that occurred with the OC of 6th Platoon and myself. We just basically come back from an attack to our front. We'd skirmished back. And during that time, a number of people had been injured and killed. The OC of our 6th Platoon had then contacted B Company commanding officer. And it was decided to go firm, basically, in that position, having withdrew from the front, due to the fact that our entire section had been either wounded or killed. We were now basically inoperable, and so we went firm at that particular point. Within about 5 minutes of going firm there, bearing in mind it was pretty black, and there was prisoners to our front.
Can you just explain, this is a bit of jargon for going firm, what this actually means to the layman?
Yeah, it's just a bit of jargon. It means to establish a fixed position rather than going forward in an attack. And so having gone firm, a prisoner was captured by Private Lewis. He was brought in, an Argentine prisoner. We decided to use the prisoner as a form of bait. And so it was my idea to do that. I spoke directly then to the OC of 6th Platoon, and he gave the order that that would be a good idea. The prisoner was then, at gunpoint, forced to move forward into a known killing zone, where he was heard mumbling in Spanish. His hands were raised above his head, and fortunately he wasn't shot. He then collapsed, having tripped over some bodies amongst our wounded.
But this isn't the way that prisoners of war should be treated, is it?
No, certainly not. Prisoners of war deserve to be treated with humane conduct, and that's the reason I'm admitting my part in this, to examine the integrity of all ranks and soldiers in the heat of battle such as this. It happens throughout history. It's probably happening now in the Afghanistan war. The idea was to draw the sniper's fire, hoping that the sniper would think he was one of us. And if then the sniper had opened up, hopefully we may have seen the flash of his weapon and then zeroed in on his position.
So what is your thoughts about the rights and wrongs of doing this with a prisoner?
Well, of course, now in hindsight, so many years on, as I said, since about 1993, I've been giving this considerable thought. But it's been a bit of a wrench from my training and loyalty to the regiment to stick my neck out, as it were, and admit this information.
But isn't it a bit strange for you to be criticising your commanding officer when the suggestion, which is so controversial, to send a prisoner forward as bait, as you said, was actually your suggestion?
Yeah, I'm incriminating myself, I realise, in the process of this, but I think that it's necessary. I've had a long time to think about this now, in conjunction with prisoners being mistreated in Iraq recently, and in general, civilians being killed, perhaps even in Palestine, or the Middle East in general, maybe even the Vietnam War, and in general, people are mistreated. And I'm hoping by introducing this information to also add evidence to the credibility of other books that have been mentioning this type of mistreatment to prisoners.
So what you're saying is, rather than going along with your suggestion, your commanding officer should have halted all idea of using a prisoner of bait at that moment?
Oh, certainly, as an officer, he should have been considerably thinking of the Geneva Convention more than perhaps me as a private soldier. But it just goes to show you that in the heat of the battle, with our troops particularly wounded, and we could hear them, obviously, asking for help. It just seemed the obvious thing at the time to do, strategically.
So was this tactic successful? I mean, what happened to the Argentine prisoner? Was he shot at by the snipers?
Well, fortunately, he wasn't. He was mumbling in Spanish, and I don't know if that made any difference. His hands, nevertheless, were up. And I remember thinking this, you know, why the hell's he got his hands up? As if anyone looked at him from a distance, from a night scope, they'd obviously see that. And so he wouldn't be shot at. But in any case, he wasn't shot at. He fell amongst the prisoners. And the next morning, at first light, the order was given to therefore go forward and retrieve the injured and the dead. And during that process, whilst I retrieved a live soldier called Private Clark, I actually came across this Argentine prisoner who was still alive.
Surely when you join the army, your job is just simply to do what you're ordered and do what you're told by your commanding officer.
That's what the paras are basically all about. We have a reputation for doing what we're told immediately, very disciplined troops. We don't question it at all. So, in this way, this is very unusual that I'm now exposing this.
At what point do you think a soldier could or should actually disobey an order? Do you think that there's a line that the soldiers need to draw themselves, or should they just follow orders without question?
Essentially, they should follow orders without question. But in conditions of battle, in such as this example on London, it's very difficult to make sense of the legal and the illegal within an order. And so it seems to me that at the time, the best strategy, I mean, we're not carrying a Geneva Convention law book in our pockets or any other form of, to the forefront of our minds. So we're just interested in our mates getting them rescued. And so a lot of strategy is bound to be illegal. And it was in the Falklands. If you read these books, you'll see that it was quite clearly illegal.
So what do you think can happen? How could this situation be improved? An absolute guarantee that the Geneva Convention will be adhered to. Is that possible? And what would you like to see if you think it is?
That's the major reason that I'm exposing this information. I hope that it will add to the testimonials of other people to give more credence, credibility to what they have said, because the police apparently don't seem to believe it. And by doing this, I hope other people come forward as well and commit their information, because a lot has to be done at training level throughout both the officers and the ranks to introduce to their conscience much more adherence to the laws of war, like the Geneva Convention. They don't seem to remember that in the heat of the battle. They should do, and so should we as troops.
That was Bryn Richard Cowley there, a veteran of the 1982 Falklands conflict and someone who wants to see the military police taking more action when they get reports of British soldiers contravening the Geneva Conventions, which govern warfare. Martin, the Falklands was a long time ago, and this was all happening in the heat of battle. Do you think Bryn is right to be still concerned about such what was possibly a trivial incident?
Well, it's obviously not a trivial incident. It's certainly not a trivial incident to him. I think he should be concerned. I mean, there are obviously, every time you step over the line into illegal behaviour, the potential to go further down the line into further illegal behaviour is there. And you know, soldiers should understand what the laws of war are. For example, British soldiers, if they are ordered to carry out torture, should refuse to do it. I mean, it's as simple as that. And we know that that's been going on, that they have been ordered to torture people.
But, I mean, it's very difficult to police this kind of thing, isn't it? The military police it, or what do you want to say, when in the heat of battle. Almost impossible.
Well, I mean, I think the actual incident that he is describing was a heat of battle incident. And therefore, you could say there's some justification for what happened. But don't forget, if it would have been a British soldier who had been sent out to be a target by the Argentinians, we'd have gone mad. And that's what Richard's point was. If it had been the other way around, we wouldn't have been happy at all, would we?
Right, thanks very much. That's all for this week. Coming up next is the Sky News at 7 o'clock. Do please join us at 5 on Friday Dry Time each week here on BCFM 93.2, where we review the week's news and discuss some of the big stories in Bristol, Britain and around the world. Thanks very much to this week's guest, Freemason investigator Jerry Coulter, and our resident Old Labour pundit and Oxford economist Martin Summers, and of course too to Marina Morris for this week's Vox Pop and reports. If you're on broadband internet, you can hear all our previous Friday Drive times, including my special report on mobile masts and wireless safety, and find out what's coming up next week by going to bcfm.org.uk and clicking on presenters or podcasts to find my page. I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend.
You are listening to BCFM 93.2.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol. It is run by volunteers and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.